deep, but wait a minute. The neighborhood support, so put some money in it. A corporation zone, they gotta give up the dough to my town, or else we gotta shut them down. I 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 shut them down.
Chuck D to open this up, one of my mighty 70 followers.
Yeah, you got 70 now. It's good.
I've been like vacillating up and down. I'm right around 70.
I've been doing that the same with like 580.
Yeah. But
or 680.
But I got Chuck on my team.
Yeah,
so.
You do have Chuck on your team. Yeah, that's
so
right.
At Mr. Chuck D, thank you for the follow.
Move skill number 99.
99, wow.
We have one more until 100.
Whoa.
So maybe I should call the producer and have him do like some greatest hits or something.
Yeah, and have him send the
air quotes
that scratch for that Mania ticket.
Oh, the money. Okay, yeah. Well, you got to get PayPal, dude. You know, like you're so technologically inept, dude. You know, you can't even like set up a flipping PayPal account. You know, I gotta like walk you through it and stuff.
I can't believe
it's
10% of the money that I get paid.
You're not losing 10% of the money that you get paid. It's so people can give you money. You're not going to lose any 10%.
No, they don't charge you a percent for...
Not if it's a gift. If it's for personal use, they don't charge you 10%. This ain't casino, dude. You know, they don't skim off the top, dude.
And Joe Pesci's going to come after him with a hammer.
Yeah, you know, you do with cheaters around here. Yeah, so Chuck D, I was kind of listening to the other day, because I was a big Pete Rock fan way back when, more so than you.
It's definitely not Wax.
Yeah.
I like Pete on the mic, actually.
Pete is good on the mic.
Yeah.
But I like Nike, but wait a minute. You know, it's like you got to put the money back into the community and stuff. That's some, like, major stuff back then, dude. You don't hear that stuff no more, you know? Guys just, like, breaking it down. The times have changed. Like, Public Enemy, they were a great group, but, you know, they're two political people. It wasn't for the masses, let's just say that. It's funny, like, in the 90s, like, they were, like, probably the hottest rap group out there, and they said a lot of things. And now... Yeah, music now where the hottest like group really doesn't say anything. So I just kind of find that funny.
Well, that's what kind of why Chuck's it's an interesting follow. You know, not everything like it's pretty serious, but so I don't like necessarily read every little thing. But he does have like some internet radio show where they play a lot of like rap and stuff, which is pretty cool, like, to get to see, like, what he's into and the people that he likes, and he's just all out the last year or so been attacking a radio, which is pretty, it's pretty good, it's pretty funny, I think.
Here's another thing I want to attack. So, and I don't know if this is, you know, me being ignorant or whatever it is, but I have, like, a lot of black friends and stuff, right? And when, now granted, Common's like acceptance speech for the Grammy that he won for like best song, it was pretty good, you know. Like, can't front on Common, right?
Okay.
But all these people are like, oh, it's such a great, you know, victory for, you know, them to win the Grammys for Song of the Year. It's like, really, dude? I'm like, so they gave a minority a Grammy for music, you know? But they've never, I think, like the last like black person to win. Well. I guess that one girl won for like The Help or whatever, you know, like, but it's always like best supporting actress, you know, like you don't have like a lot of like actors that win, you know, for like best actors, always like in a supporting role. And then I got these people stumping that like, oh, you know, such a victory. It's like, yeah. So you get an award for dancing and singing a song, you know, it's like, you can't see that. So that's just a problem. It's just a little tangent that I kind of had a problem with. You know, it's like you're so involved to like, in, you know, like I remember like when I was like in journalism and stuff, and I was, you know, I'd be like an editor of a paper and stuff, and like, oh, it's so good that we have one of our own in like positions of power. And it's like, well, that's not really what journalism is about. You know, it's not about like minorities being in power. Now, granted, you do need to have a minority voice in there, but to me, it's not a triumph to, that's not the fight. You know, the fight's like to tell the truth. And I think the fight for like us being minorities is to like be treated like everybody else and not use our race as like a card to promote ourselves or to make us feel better as a culture. So that's just the problem that I have. Yeah. I don't want to get too deep, but you know, it's always a problem that I face. You know,
well, I can't really speak on this because I don't pay attention to Oscars and the Grammys and all that. Well, I didn't even know he won.
The only reason why I was watching because it was I was bartending that night, and you know, so everybody was watching the Grammys and stuff or whatever, Oscars, Grammys, whatever it is. But
yeah, I will reference back since I'll wrap this thing up right now. Since we started off with Chuck D, Public Enemy with Flavor Flav, who gives a fuck about a goddamn Grammy?
Yeah, there we go.
So on to the wrestling business.
Very good. So talking about throwbacks,
okay,
we have to get into. It's funny. I think you know, I think we're opening up every show with this, but Access TV with the New Japan Pro Wrestling, they had the G1 Climax showed like 3 matches of the G1 Climax tournament. Mm-hmm. Every match, top to bottom, dude, was like watching wrestling way back when. I mean, there were some. I mean, there's a lot of high spots. So here's a question that I want to ask you. So like, you had like Carl Anderson versus a Japanese guy.
It was
a well known
Hiroyoshi Tenzan.
So Tenzan. Yeah. So
old Tenzan.
Old Tenzan. But old Tenzan still
got it done. Yeah.
So, I mean, Tenzan is, like, a huge, like, you know, just a huge guy, especially when he was younger, you know, with my boy Masahiro Chono and stuff. So, Tenzan's, like, a staple of, like, wrestling. Then you have, I don't even know who the guys are. I just remember, like, just really good matches.
I couldn't remember.
The second match was who's the guy that, he fought Muda a lot. He dressed in the orange and stuff, and I think he was fighting Davey Boy Smith Jr. It's like not Namatoshi.
No,
Nakamura. Nakamura. Yeah. So that was good. I mean, Davey Boy Smith Jr., he's fine.
Nakamura, I thought, fought the last match.
No, it was Nakamura. It was the guy. So it's the other guy that's really hot right now. You know, it was hot for a while. It was, you know, you have Okada, and then you have the Intercontinental Champion. Tanahashi? It wasn't Tanahashi. But it's a major, I mean, like, he's probably, like, the second biggest Japanese wrestler in Japan, and we don't even know the guy's name. But I've seen him before, and I never really liked him. I was like, what is it with this guy? And he was fine, that the dude from DDT. Talking about Nakamura, I think it's Nakamura, right?
Nakamura was in the end with the red vest.
But the other guy, his name starts with an N as well. And he's, like, a well-known guy, and I'm just blanking right now because I've pretty much driven probably about 400 miles in the past 2 days, so I'm fried, dude. So, but that guy, but he's, I don't want to say Hase, it's not Hase. He was like a IWGP champion as well. And he fought Davey Boy Smith, and towards the end, man, that guy just turned it on. And it's like, he's old too, but it's like, the guy still has it. Nakamura's a guy I want to talk about though, because, I knew who he was. I didn't understand his kind of gimmick, and then once I kind of realized it was kind of like a Prince type gimmick, or you know, reminds me a lot of Prince, I got on board. But the other guy was really good. But Nakamura really impressed me in that match, and just kind of the whole storytelling and just his character, mm-hmm. I think works really well. If you look at his character in a vacuum, which I have, you know, because I never really seen any matches with him. I'm like, what the hell is this? I'm like, really, this is like your number two star, or like your up and coming star. But then watching the whole match and just kind of watching what he's doing, it's just great to watch, dude. I'm sitting there watching. I text you. I'm just like, this is like epic, dude.
Yeah.
You know, and it's stuff that I haven't seen in about 10 to 15 years, and that's the type of wrestling that I miss. And it's really kind of like, you know, WWE really right now to me is really kind of secondary to watching this. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed Access TV and New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yeah, I figured Nakamura would probably be your favorite guy just because I just figured his gimmick was something that you would take to and like his style in the ring. But yeah, that's the thing with these guys, like they can have their gimmick and their characters, but once they get in the ring, it's a very stiff style. He's a pretty good technician. But yeah, a lot of those knees, like it's like not exactly a Shining Wizard, but it's kind of almost like a version of it with that Bama Yi, which is that running knee that he does. So it's a lot of good hard strikes, and the thing that kind of makes him legit, actually kind of found it funny now that I've been watching it a little bit, but I've actually kind of taken to enjoying the broadcast team that does it, and they're no frills, but it's very refreshing to listen to them just call a wrestling match and kind of give the history of what these guys have been going through without like 1,000 cliches a second and without them trying to get through their reads for every single thing they're trying to promote. So I think they do a pretty good job, and they've really built him well, like kind of telling, kind of like that's one of the things with the Japanese wrestling is very closely married to MMA, and a lot of the Japanese wrestlers have actually like, you know, ventured into MMA at different parts, and for you to see like a guy like Nakamura that used to do and had a relatively successful run in MMA, and then it kind of translates over to, yeah, you know, I'm buying this guy as even though he's got this kind of weird gimmick, he's like this kind of skinny, lanky guy. I think it plays all well to him, and it kind of also lets you believe, yeah, this guy could kick dudes' asses for the most part. And the other guy, like, so they just had brought him in. I think he was from, I want to say he's from like Pro Wrestling Noah, which is like a.
It was a DDT, so it's probably, I think DDT and Noah.
I know Noah's like a subsidiary of New Japan.
He was from DDT.
Okay, well DDT. The organization, not the okay,
yeah,
okay, yeah, but he was really good too. He was small. Yeah. It was funny. So I saw my friend
your mole,
the
right?
Guy, yes, yeah. Yes, the guy that's a wrestler, and we were talking about watching that Access match, and he was saying the guy reminded him of he said he thought he was the Japanese Kevin Von Erich. And he just said like he had the exact same build, like he had the same kind of like long hair. Just a good technician in the ring, and I thought that was a pretty interesting comparison. You know, a lot smaller, obviously, but the guy that kid could work. I was really impressed. I'd seen the name, but I had never seen any matches or known any of the things that he was in. But I was pretty impressed with how he showed.
So, and the one thing that I'm really wary about with any independent wrestling is just it's like high spot theater, and there's elements of a lot of high spots in that match. But I think what really works, and if a lot of people don't kind of get Japanese wrestling, is that they have this whole thing called like warrior spirit, and that's what the Japanese audience really like looks for and really respects. And I thought that guy, I think his name's like Shibu or whatever it is, but that's the one thing that he really showed. I mean, like he took like two or three Bama Yis, right, and he kicked out of like two of them, and I was kind of going like, well, they're kicking out of all these high spots, but with the way it works, I mean, the guy was just getting, I mean, he was just getting pummeled. And then, like, so for him to, like, to take, like, stiff shots like that and then, you know, and kick out, or then he stands up, you know, it's like, that's kind of like the whole warrior spirit mentality that's in Japanese wrestling. And then that last, was it Bama Yi?
Yeah.
The last Bama Yi that he took, I mean, you just see his body language, and he's, like, pretty much, like, knocked out, you know, he's awake, knocked out, or whatever I'm trying to say. And I know it's a show, and I know it's scripted and stuff, but it's different from, like, you know, you take, like, any indie scene here, and you're just seeing all these high spots, and these guys are kicking out of everything. It's like, what the hell does that mean? There were some elements in there, but I think kind of the warrior spirit really kind of explains a lot of things. And it's just nice to kind of just sit back and watch the show. And that guy, and it wasn't just him either. I mean, Nakamura, like, he took, like, a Frankensteiner off the top rope, and he sold the hell out of it. You know, it was really kind of a case where, like say you watch a WWE match or you even watch like an indie match and like a guy does like a Hurricane Rana or a Frankensteiner and it's like 2 seconds late, you know, like they react 2 seconds late to it. Like the guy's already on the ground and then they decide to flip and hit the ground. Right. I mean, everything was just, you know, it really showed how good of a worker Nakamura is, because Nakamura to me really got outshined, but it was just kind of that whole thing where, he's stiff as all hell. I didn't know he had the MMA background, so it even enhances it even more. But the winner of the, you know, the challenger came across really well, and I thought that he stole some spots. But then overall, the overall body of work, like Nakamura didn't have as much crazy high spots as this kid did. But for him to kind of overcome these high spots and still like become like, still come across as a better performer, I think that speaks volumes for Nakamura. A guy that I did not like when I first saw him. I was really a big fan of Okada. I'm like, ah, oh, shit, I can't see Okada today. But then watching Nakamura, I was like, I got my money's worth, you know, and it was free, so it's even better, you know?
And then the thing that's cool, you know, that I don't know if they're going to get into, but I want to see, like, the whole evolution of that group, because those guys are, like, partners between the two of them, Ghetto and Jado, like, and then various other members that have come through, but like that's a really good faction, and I can see what guys like Okada and Nakamura really could play off each other really well in that group dynamic.
You know? So it's all those four guys that are part of this Team Chaos, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you say I don't even know that either. So yeah. You know, here I'm supposed to be like the Japanese guy, and you're the one that's coming through with the knowledge. So
well, I've had to build wisely with my video game because I only have 100. Spots. So for you, I think, you know, you got like 600 spots you can just put guys in, and some of them are already preloaded. I had to like kind of do some decision making and figuring out like guys I wanted to bring in, and if I was going to bring them in, like how would I make those groups and things. So I, over the last couple of years, even though not seeing a ton of the matches, like I've done quite a bit of research through, like, I mean, it's Wikipedia, so I don't take it for a fact, but like just on who guys were, who they've been affiliated with, and some of the things. So that's why I have a little bit of an understanding of what's going on, and who some of these guys are. But then I'll blank out on names like the guy we're trying to. Yeah. It wasn't Ishii, was it?
No.
It was like the short, stocky guy.
He's wearing orange and stuff.
Nah, orange. The orange is still in the eye.
It was like black. It was like kind of black camouflage with orange. Yeah, he had like the nose thing. A.K.A. Jerry Rice stuff.
Wasn't Maccabi again, right?
Wasn't Maccabi, no. Maccabi. No, he was a major guy like in the late 90s. I mean, he used to run with you know, he had some really good matches with Muda, you know, Chono as well. I mean, he's like Hase, Chono, Great Muda, and this guy. We're like okay. The four like.
So when
main
you
guys.
Say when you say orange, I'm thinking Kenta Kobashi, but I know it's not Kenta Kobashi.
No. But it overall, I mean, just like, you know, watching a full match with Carl Anderson, and then you know, really wanting to see Carl Anderson, and then the first guy that comes out is Tenzan. I'm like, oh, I'm going to see a Tenzan match. You know, yeah. I haven't seen a Tenzan match in such a long time.
Yeah.
And you know, Tenzan. You know, it's the funny thing too is the crowd itself. You know, it's you know, you're talking about the announcers where there's no frills about them. This crowd, you know, they're not trying to. You know, and this is, granted, this is 2013, so it's kind of like the infancy of Twitter and stuff or anything, but, and even then, I mean, the Japanese crowd, they're not trying to make a name for themselves, they're not trying to, you know, dictate where they want the company to go, they're not bitching about anything, they're to watch, like, a good match, and when they're cheering, you know, like, see, like, back in the 80s and stuff, they never cheered, like, nobody ever cheered,
right.
You know, they did when something was a high spot, but it was funny, like, when Tenzin lost, I was looking in the crowd, and they're like, one of the guys was holding this little kid, and the kid's, like, close to tears, because Tenzin lost. Mm-hmm. He knew once Carl Anderson put his version of the diamond cutter on him, and so, like, this poor kid, like, he just looked, just, you know, just has this face, like, his whole world's ended, mm-hmm. and everybody's going all crazy, and then even with the whole, you know, Tenzin thing, where he's setting him up for the Anaconda bomb and stuff, and then Carl Anderson turns it around, it's just like a perfect finish, you know. It's like you know Carl Anderson's going to win. You knew that. I knew that Davey Boy Smith was going to win because, you know, they're pumping the guidance to kind of be, you know, the heels for that tournament. And well, they're the younger guys, and these guys are doing jobs for them. And the good thing is that, like, these guys, it's funny how we're talking about this, because you have these older group of guys, and they're really making a name for these younger guys. They're passing, you know, they're doing the jobs for these guys, but in the end, they're not getting hurt whatsoever. They're still legends in their own right.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the cool things about the G1 tournament, too, the way it's set up. It's like, no one ever goes through that thing undefeated, right? You know, everyone takes their losses getting through, so because it's like, you know, it's not an elimination deal. So you can have that opportunity to give, like, young guys a little bit of a push or more of a push and not get through and kind of have the chance to bring back that old veteran for that one run, that late run, to see if he can get all the way back to the top. So I just think the whole way the thing's set up is perfect. And I think what we've been, I mean, I've been advocating for a while, you know, I think when these shows, you asked, like, what would I bring back? And I said King of the Ring. I think they're just hurting to have, like, a real tournament in the WWE. It's been so many years. And, I mean, I'll say King of the Ring just because that's what they're familiar with. But if they could have some kind of tournament the way G1 is set up, I think that would be so much better because, you know, you would have the opportunity to, you know, let some of these younger guys that people want to get behind, that they're not ready to push, you know, they can get, like, wins here and there. And still in the end, you know they might not win the tournament, but it's a chance to elevate them a little bit if they have a kind of tournament that's based around that, like, not single elimination style, but a tournament is sorely needed in wrestling.
So we go with that tournament, and I kind of touched on how you have these older kind of like legends in Japan, and they're losing to these guys, but since everything's been booked so well, and it's kind of a case where I think talent kind of more comes through than actually, like, you know, what sells and what merchandises and stuff. And then you have, like, your mega stars like Okada, like Nakamura, that they kind of, they're transcending everything, so it really doesn't matter what happens. You can protect them and they can win, and you have no problem with it. Like, I watched an Okada match, and, you know, like, the underdog in me, like, wants Prince Devitt to win or whatever. Or the first Okada match I saw was against Makabe, and... I'm watching the Makabe and
you still haven't seen the Tanahashi
one. I haven't seen. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, like, I knew you said the Tanahashi one was even better, but but I'm watching Makabe, and it's like, you know, and in the beginning, I'm really rooting for Okada, you know, because, like, Okada, you can tell the guy's a star, and Makabe is kind of like, he's on his way out, you know, but then, like, halfway through the match, Makabe just turns it on, and I'm starting to root for Makabe, and it's like, I'm watching it, and I was like, yeah, but, you know, then Okada has a great dropkick, whatever, and then I'm like, back in Okada's corner. So it's nice to do that. And then, you know, then you kind of temper that with, say, like a Bray Wyatt challenging the Undertaker, and you don't know, like, I feel that Undertaker should do, if he should really, like, do a job for someone, I think it should be someone like Bray Wyatt. Mm-hmm. I think Bray Wyatt has deserved to, you know, I think Bray Wyatt, every Bray Wyatt match I've seen over the past, like, 4 or 5 months, to me, has been really, really good. I enjoy his ring work, and I don't want to have him take a step down if Undertaker beats him. I just don't see Undertaker being, what, 21-2 or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So there's that aspect of it as well. You bring up a tournament, and it looks like they're going to have a 4-way for the Intercontinental belt. And I wanted to get your impression, if it's a 4-way, how you feel about a 4-way for the Intercontinental belt.
Well, who are the guys that are supposed to be in this 4-way? And be Barrett and
Dolph, R-Truth, and then Ambrose.
I mean, I think that'd be a pretty good match.
I mean, is it the right thing to do for WrestleMania to have, like, a 4-way like that? Because the last time they had a 4-way, it was Benoit, Angle, Chris Jericho. And there's another guy. I forget who it is. But let's just say, I mean, those three guys by themselves.
Like Christian or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think my initial reaction is, I don't really know why R-Truth is the fourth guy in that match, but I think he could do well.
Because he beat Wade Barrett.
I understand that. But, I mean,
come on, man.
Sorry.
Follow the storyline, man.
Yeah. But
I mean, that just shows the storyline in itself as well, you know?
Right. Yeah. I have no problem with R-Truth getting a paycheck, and R-Truth in a match like that with three other guys that are pretty much at the top of their game, R-Truth's not going to embarrass himself. So I don't have any problem with the entrance at that point. I think there's a lot that you could do between Ziggler, Wade Barrett, and Dean Ambrose. There's a lot of direction that could spin off of. I think that would be good. The kind of damper on it is a lot of people were hoping that if Bryan didn't get the main event, you're going to see Ziggler versus Daniel Bryan. I personally never thought that would happen just because I think they'd be too afraid that match would be so much better than any other match on the card that they would never want to have that. So I think this is a viable alternative. I got no problem with that match. I just would like somebody to take control of the Intercontinental title and then do something with it. I thought, you know, Dolph that last couple of runs he had towards the end of last year, great runs, and I thought really made the Intercontinental belt look good again. And I think there's absolutely no reason why Wade Barrett can't do that, but for whatever reason, you know, every other match he loses to Sin Cara or to R-Truth or to some other job guy, which, I mean, I just don't understand what the point of that is. Make Wade look strong. There's no reason not to book Wade strong. There's plenty of ways you can get guys like Wade Barrett into a story with Dean Ambrose, or you don't really have to do anything ridiculous. Like, it's just, don't make it more difficult than it has to be. Like, Ambrose, Ziggler, you don't need to, like, conjure up some ridiculous storyline to make that interesting with Wade Barrett. And then with like, you know, Sin Cara or R-Truth, it's kind of like, well, what are these guys doing in this match with Wade Barrett anyway if he's the Intercontinental Champion? So that's still a little bit of silliness in it, but yeah, I got no problem with that match. I'll be excited.
So, I mean, I'm watching Raw, and on Friday night or maybe Saturday night when I get a chance, like, you know, I watch New Japan, and I'm looking at these match lengths, and it's like 8 minutes, you know, 7 minutes.
Oh, that New Japan?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, like, so like this tournament, you know, it's like eight minutes, 55 seconds. And I'm sitting there going, and it feels like a lot longer. It feels like you're watching like a 15-minute or 20-minute match.
Well, some of them are. Like, they built, like, the first match,
yeah,
they edited quite a bit.
Yeah, but I mean,
the second match was like 15, and the third one was like 20-something.
Yeah, the third one, of course, yeah. I mean, a 20-minute match. But even but there was one match that was like, I think the Davey Boy one was like 8 minutes and 55 seconds. Well, I have like a whole story watching this match. And then we get like 8-minute matches in WWE, and I just feel like it's just, I just feel like it's fodder. You know, I feel like the match is like, it's, you know, they talk about the WWE style. After watching New Japan for the past 3 weeks, it's like, you can do other styles. And when you compare the two against each other, just those WWE matches, if they're like 8 minutes long, it's like, it's not like I'm watching anything. You know, like, I just don't get it. I mean, there's a huge difference in what's the difference between the 8-minute match in New Japan, like an 8-minute match in WWE?
I think there's a ton of more freedom that they're allowed to do what they want to do in Japan. I think that you talk about high spots, like a lot of the guys in Japan have unique high spots, like with some good power moves that are involved. In WWE, it's like the same high spot that everybody does, suicide dive, or you know, there's not that much variation into the movesets that they're allowing these guys to do. And so that, I think, that's why it becomes kind of tiresome. And I think maybe some of it's, you know, I mean, New Japan's new for us right now, too. It's like, you know, every match we've seen is the first time we've seen those two guys go at each other. And WWE, like, you know, they like to beat the dead horse with, like, three straight weeks of Daniel Bryan Kane twice a week or this and that. Would you
have a problem, though, with, like, say, if you saw, so say they had, like, a three-match run with Okada and Makabe? Do you think you think you'd be bored by the end of the second match? I mean, I just kind of feel like, see that's like, it's like right now I'm kind of in a point now where it's like,
I don't think I would, but the thing is, both of those guys could work, right? And the problem is, like, you decide that you're going to do some feud between Roman Reigns and the Big Show, and it's like that, those guys just don't quite work for each other. You can do that match every so often, but if I'm seeing four Raws and SmackDowns in a row in a matter of 2 weeks, and every time it's Roman Reigns versus Show, or Roman Reigns versus Show and Kane, or, you know, some version of a handicap or whatever tag team match, it becomes the same thing over and over again. And again, like, unless they're varying it up, then it kind of becomes dull. Like that's the thing. Like, the other guys are a lot more creative with the way they wrestle in Japan.
So last week, I kind of beat the stump for Big Show and Kane, and it was just kind of, you know, I think I was a lot more awake, and I'm not as tired as I am today. And I wasn't as tired, you know, because Raw to me was very lackluster. SmackDown, I don't think I watched it until like Sunday, you know, so it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't even a case where I was like, oh, I'm going to watch SmackDown. It's more of a case like, okay, I'm going to go to sleep. I'm probably going to fall asleep in about 45 minutes. So I'm going to try to get as much SmackDown as I can. And I think I watched it all the way through, but it wasn't like it was anything great. Why are these guys still around? I mean, they are not They are not enhancement talent. They can't make the other person look good. Like, why are these two guys here?
It sounds like you're going opposite of a position from last week.
I mean, it's not so much going off position, but here's the whole thing. It's like, we're talking about this, right? And then you just brought up a great point. So I'm going off of the point that you made. I feel that Big Show and Kane work within the system to try to create like a big heel faction. And it was kind of nice when Stephanie's talking to Renner in the backstage and she's saying, like, we have all these guys. I'm like, we'll be dominant. And I'm sitting there going, like, yeah, you know what? Yeah, you would be dominant. That would be a good faction to see. I know it's not going to happen because I know Randy Orton's going to come out on his own, which is fine. I don't have a problem with that. But they work within the system of what it is, but at the same time, it's like the same thing. It's like I'm watching Tenzan face Carl Anderson, right? And Tenzan is a way better wrestler than Carl Anderson is. Tenzan is on his way out. I mean, he's old as all hell. And he does the job for Carl Anderson because he can work. You have two guys that work within the fringes of the WWE style, and they don't make anybody look good. Why are they using these two guys for the guys that they're trying to make their up-and-comers? And to tell you the truth, even like Daniel Bryan, I mean, Daniel Bryan is not CM Punk. You know, CM Punk can have a match with anybody, and if CM Punk has to do a job for someone, like a young guy like that, he can do it. He can have his match, but he's not the dominating factor in his match. He can work and work within the guys. Like I've seen him time and time again make other guys look really, really good. I think the only time that Daniel Bryan really impressed me was twice, was against Bray Wyatt, was against Rollins on a Raw. But he wasn't having there was no push for him. Like, it wasn't like, you know, now that, you know, they're trying to make him be like a baby John Cena, like the indie John Cena that everybody can get behind. I'm watching his matches, and it's like you're watching a Daniel Bryan match, and it really doesn't showcase the other person. And I'm kind of getting tired of Daniel Bryan at this point.
Right. Okay. Well, that's kind of switch subjects.
Answer the Big Show, Kane, and then Daniel Bryan.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm going to write it down. You got a lot of work, a lot of checkpoints to make.
So the Big Show. Yeah, I think the Big Show can work. I think the Big Show has gotten much better on the mic in the last, say, 2 to 3 years, to the point where he can carry promos, or he can be kind of like the other guy in the promo to come in and say his piece, and he does a good job of it. So there's a point for him. There's a purpose for him. I just think, again, as what I said last year, you're kind of duplicating when you put him and Kane. Okay, there's nothing that Big Show can't do that Kane can. And there's a lot of stuff that Show does that Kane can't. So Kane's basically just this other really...
Say that really fast. Kane can't. You know? Yeah. Go ahead.
There's a lot... So there's really no... I just don't see any point for having Kane. He doesn't fit what they do, like character-wise, you know. Like, if I want to see Kane, I want to see him in the red suit. And I'm not saying I do want to see him, but if I do, that's where I want him to be. And that's how he works, this whole corporate thing. I mean, I think they think it's like some comedy heat gimmick thing or something, just being silly, just kind of like the way when they put weird tag team partners with Kane. This time he's his own partner and has been this corporate guy wrestling in a pair of slacks. But it's just no good.
It's like the Right to Censor or whatever. That's what he reminds me of. But go ahead.
Yeah. So it's like there's plenty of guys that they got. I mean, I don't care if you want to dip into NXT to just find a big guy to come up and be a second guy that's muscle. You know, Big Show is really all the muscle you need. Randy Orton's no small man. So if you get another guy in there that's like, you know, in that 6'6 to 6'8 range with decent size, and you have him partnering up with Show just as another muscle person, that's totally fine. It doesn't have to be Kane, and then you can build a new guy.
So there's one thing I want to. I'm not trying to poke a hole in what you're trying to say. Big Show is a good worker. I'm not going to take that away from him. But
he doesn't work with everybody.
But yeah, he only has one match. And the whole thing is, I'm not expecting him to have, like, say, have a match with Sin Cara and have it be like a great, like, technical fest against, you know. He can only have one match. But you're using this guy to kind of make these new stars. And that's what I have a problem with. Since he can only have one match, it's only one story you can tell. You know, it's like it's, if it's going to be Roman Reigns or whatever it is, and even Daniel Bryan to a small part. And that's when, because I thought that Daniel Bryan and Big Show could have a nice program going together. But when you have two guys that can only do one, and right now Daniel Bryan can only do one match, and it's pretty stale. So you have these two guys that can only do one match against each other. That doesn't work as well. It doesn't. Roman Reigns and Big Show doesn't work at the same time. And who's getting the heat? You know, it's like kind of like the whole thing, like when you're in high school and there's this girl and she there's this guy and he's with this girl and the girl like cheats on, you know, he cheats with this other girl and the girl is the one that gets her ass kicked by all these girls and stuff. I was like, well, what about the guy? You know, like the guy comes off scot-free and she's the one that gets all the heat. Well, it's the same thing, like, you know, Roman Reigns, you know, probably has the hair for it too, but they're having bad matches and Roman Reigns is getting all the heat and there's no heat on Big Show.
Right, and the Big Show's the veteran, right? He's the guy that should be leading him through this and trying to make him come out looking better. Right. No, agree. So let me I'll throw a name as what I think would be the best way to do it and would be a better version of what they're trying to do with Kane anyway. It should be Luke Harper. Okay. Even though Luke Harper is not 6'10" and he's probably like 50 pounds less than Kane, he's every bit as physically intimidating, especially when he's side by side with the Big Show. And he can work any style of match, really, which, you know, if you're going to be putting the authority or the corporation into a bunch of matches, give me some guys that can put on a good fucking match. And then the other thing I say, too, is that if you go ahead and do him in there, you go and put a suit on Luke Harper, okay, you're going to get much more effect out of that. Nobody cares about Kane anymore, okay? But if you go and put a suit on Luke Harper, who's been walking out in the same filthy wife beater and jeans for the last year and a half, that's going to make people say, wait, they can really go after him as the sellout. You know how everyone goes after Big Show as the sellout and Rollins? I mean, you know, you can really go after Harper as a guy that sold out and went corporate after being some gator wrestling backwoods creepy dude with a beard.
Slick his hair back and put him in a ponytail and stuff. Yeah, make him like a cheap, like, 90s parody of, like, ponytail guys and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I think... And you don't lose anything in terms of intimidation factor, and you gain infinite amounts of ability to throw out good matches. If you want to go out and you want to make the authority this dominant faction and put them in matches and have them beat guys, even if you want to have them lose guys, lose those some of those matches. You got Harper. Harper can lose matches, and it's not going to affect him, but he can win, and it's going to be believable. And so you go and put him as a tag team partner with Show. You got that power and that intimidation that Big Show brings, and you still have that size and intimidation, but you bring a ton of athleticism with Harper as the partner rather than kind of a redundant match between Kane and the Big Show, which is a really limited match right now.
So, and what are your what do you think about my statements about Daniel Bryan? I mean,
I think he is getting kind of stale. It's like I kind of look at it kind of from the prism of what you've been bringing up, but yeah, like, I just was, in particular, this match he did, when he goes to that spot where he does the run into the corner and the backflip and then ducks the clothesline and then run. I mean, that's as scripted as any match, as any move that John Cena or any other guy has. And the crowd eats it up because they love Daniel Bryan. But, I mean, again, like, I don't understand how people don't see that he's just kind of doing the same spots over and over again. And there's not a ton of, like, variance of when he pulls off that. Like, that in particular, like, you know, his running kick is really good. I like how he added that, double underhook suplex into an armbar. I think that's really nice. And it kind of lends back to the idea of this guy being a submission expert, which I think is a good angle to use with him. But, yeah, that particular spot, the run into the corner with the backflip is just killing me at this point. It's like, you see it coming about as far away as you see a Triple H line before he starts a sentence, right? And it's just like...
Well, and then he has to have the obligatory suicide dive, which is really, really boring. And we brought this up like 4 episodes ago, saying that suicide dive is just totally ineffective. Mm-hmm. And it's just... I just feel like you have these guys, you have a group of, you know, young guys, Rollins, Reigns, Ambrose, you know, and even like Ambrose's run... leading up to Survivor Series or the Royal Rumble. I mean, leading up to the Royal Rumble, he was having a nice run, and then they take him away, and they start like having him talk and do all this other stuff. It's like, and it's the same kind of thing with Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt had a great run, probably a week before Royal Rumble. Then he had a good run after. He was like in the opening match and stuff, and it's like, okay, and that's why I was starting to like it again. It's like, okay, these guys are wrestling the guys that I want to watch, and then they take him out of the ring again, and now they're doing all these promos again. So it just shows, you know, it is, you know, the WWE is going to be what it is. I'm just glad that I have another avenue now. And I've done this before. I mean, we've always done this. I mean, you're listening to two guys when The Rock was in his prime in terms of popularity. We were saying, like, hey, you know what? It's not because it was cool not to like him, but it's like, you know, he's getting stale. The difference with The Rock was that The Rock could still get it done in the ring. Mm-hmm. But he was starting.
The character.
Yeah, he was starting to just get pushed on top of us because it worked, so they keep on doing it. And I just kind of feel that's the same way with Daniel Bryan right now. And I don't get how you can have so much hate for Roman Reigns because he's the handpicked guy. Well, it's like, if you guys can't see that Daniel Bryan is pretty much turning into an indie John Cena, and I just thought of it today, I mean, right now. I mean, he's like the indie John Cena, and that's really what they're pushing. If you guys can't see that that's what's happening, listen to his promos. Watch his matches. It's the same match over and over again. The only reason why his promos are working right now is because you haven't heard it for 15 years.
His promos go up and down. Like, he has some good promos, and he has...
But it's been a lot of, like, oh, but you fans are the reason, you know...
And when he goes to that car, like, right after Rumble, he was doing a lot of that. He was really getting on my nerves. I like the direction that him and Reigns have gone in. I think their promos have been pretty good. Their interactions have been pretty good. So he's not straight vanilla John Cena on the mic where every single thing is the same cornball promo. But he does have his moments of being corny. But in the ring, it's starting to become the same match over and over again. Yes, I can't disagree with that.
So the next thing...
Still a good match.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I didn't see the Fastlane match. So, I mean, and
it was a good match, not a great match.
Yeah. I can probably predict what happened. It wasn't a Daniel Bryan Raw match where it's the same stuff over again. They probably mixed it up a little bit. They probably had some spots that were unexpected. It was probably maybe 30% of people saying yes and getting all happy that they can interact during the match and stuff. But in the end, it's like, it's not a barn burner, you know, because it's a Daniel Bryan match.
Yeah, I didn't understand it, really, because I remember specifically, those guys had a really good match about a year ago on Raw. And then I think the thing was just, at the end, when Daniel Bryan went to do the knee and Roman came out with the spear, it just wasn't, like, it wasn't clean. And that was the thing. I think, like, the match was pretty good, the finish was just kind of, like, conceptually was good, but just wasn't executed perfectly, and I think that kind of just left it as being kind of a okay match. Plus, the thing was, like, the card was kind of sad, so I think people were ready to, as Magnum TA would say, come all over Fastlane, and the way most of the card went, it gave them every reason to want to do that. So, you know, it wasn't like the main event was this home run. It was a good match, not a great match.
I like Daniel Bryan's finishing move, but it's a sloppy move. I mean, it's not. You want to go back to New Japan, like Nakamura's move. Same type of thought process behind it, but the guys that, you know, the guy that's taken that move sells it for all hell too. You know, so it's like it's very clean. Like his all three of them. Like there's probably like one of them that wasn't clean, mm-hmm. but it was still stiff as all hell.
Plus they kicked out of it anyway. So
yeah.
Okay.
The other kind of problem that I had, even though I didn't watch the pay-per-view, was, and I really don't have, I mean, I have access to watch the pay-per-view, but I don't want to watch it. John Cena has done everything in the WWE universe, you know, every cliche. The only one that he hasn't done is Stone Cold passing out to a submission. And of course, he passes out, and you know, to the camel clutch. But he didn't tap out, and it's just kind of, there's so many layers to that. You know, like one, you can say like, oh, he's trying to copy Stone Cold, you know, and kind of have that, you know, people get behind him that way because he didn't tap out or whatever it is. The difference between Stone Cold is that, first of all, he's facing Bret Hart. Second of all, he's bleeding as all hell. And third, it wasn't an aspect where, I think, you know, Stone Cold, during that time as a heel, he was starting to become like this really like great character where he's getting a ton of fan support. But I don't think that him passing out like that was to like make him like this major star. It was kind of like this quiet thing where like you watched it. And I used to watch, you know, I would watch it on Saturday mornings. You know, they show the match recapped on Saturday mornings. And I saw that match. And they had this thing called Livewire where people call in. And that format never worked either. But people calling like, hey, like, what about this Stone Cold match? I'm like, didn't Stone Cold come off so well in that? And it wasn't. Now, granted, they're getting calls from people, so maybe they're picking people that they want to say, like, hey, isn't Stone Cold, like, a star now or whatever it is? But it wasn't coming from, like, Jim Ross, or it wasn't coming from Todd Pettengill or Doc Hendricks. But it was just...
Awful Alfred.
Yeah, well, Awful Alfred was gone by that time, right? Yeah. But it was just kind of this thing. It was, like, a quiet build. And then after that match, they showed the replays and stuff, but then they go, like, oh, you know, hey, Stone Cold, you know, like, fought the Valiant fight, this, that, and this. It was just like, here's the match. And then they let the fans kind of figure out where they wanted to go with it. Where with this one, like, anything that John Cena does is dissected, and it's, especially for haters like us, haters of John Cena, or smarks like us, you know, spies like us, that was a good song.
Smarks like us.
Yeah, smarks like us.
30 pounds of silver.
Yeah. You know, we know what it is, and we know what he's trying to do, and it I just don't, For John Cena to think that him passing out is going to make fans get more in his corner or whatever it is and make him show that he's a true fighter or whatever, I don't get your mindset with that. I mean, you must be a fucking idiot if you think that, you know, smarks are going to go like, oh, hey, yeah. I mean, it was so played. It's so stupid. And the second I saw the replay and he's passed out and stuff, I was just like, okay, dude, that's what it is. All right.
And then you got to have Cole overselling it all over the place, which doesn't help.
So I mean, what thoughts are going through your mind as I talk about John Cena passing out?
It's just like,
what's in your heart?
It's just very unoriginal, is what it is. It's like the guy just can't go all the way and put somebody over, right? He just has to. It has to be always with a caveat, right? It's like, well, you know, I lost this guy, but you know, I never got pinned and I never tapped out. It's just this whole, like, manufactured, like, legacy that has to be created for John Cena so they can sell him as the all-time great whenever they want to give him, like, his two more title runs so he can pass Ric Flair, and they just add another thing to the list.
What's your favorite sports movie? Or just say it. You don't have to talk about your most favorite one, but tell me a sports movie that you like.
Happy Gilmore?
Happy Gilmore. Okay, so yeah, we can take Happy Gilmore, right? So he starts off, he's not that good, and he starts winning all these tournaments, and then what happens, right? He loses everything, right? And so you're watching the movie, he loses everything, and then what happens at the end? He comes back after he's lost like pretty much everything, right? Like, you know, he has his happy place turns into a spot where Shooter McGavin is like
ranging his grandma.
Yeah, and like he's sucking on the kiss tongue and everything like that, yeah. Right? So he has a fall, and then when he wins, you know, it's like, even though you know it's a cliche, right?
Right.
Same thing like with, like, you know, Rocky, right? Or like Rocky 3 or Rocky 2 or say like Rocky 3, right? Like Clever Lang, like
or The Natural.
The Natural, yeah. Then he, you know, the guy still has a bullet wound in his stomach and stuff, and he comes back, and you know, it's a sports cliche, but it always works. John Cena can't see that. I mean, if you lose to Rusev straight up, and then we see there was a small window where I was appreciating what John Cena was doing, okay? Because he would, if you go with like the CM Punk, his program of CM Punk, he lost that program, right? And in the end, you know, when CM Punk loses the belt, he fights Cena and Cena wins. I have no problem with that. He puts Daniel Bryan over. The problem is that storytelling wise, it didn't really matter because Randy Orton comes out and takes the title from him. But he does put Daniel Bryan over. He had a little run where he was losing the guys, and then he'd come back and win. I have no problem with that. And, you know, and that's what I always say about the guys. Like, okay, lose to Russo straight up. Let me see what happens when you lose to the guy. And when you beat him, then go ahead, because that's wrestling 101. I mean, Ric Flair used to do that all the time. Bret Hart would do that all the time. Shawn Michaels would do that. You know, The Rock lost all the time. And then he would win, you know, he'd win in the end. And to tell you the truth, Stone Cold kicked his ass every single time. But when both of the guys stepped away, The Rock's last match, Stone Cold's last match, who won? The Rock won. Mm-hmm. Right?
Triple H used to kick Rock's ass all over the place.
And so it's like, let me see how you are when you lose. You know, I mean, don't you think you can build a better story if you lost and you come out and say, hey, you know what, Rusev, you beat me, you know, but I want to see if you can do it again. You know, the greatest three-match program ever, Ric Flair and Steamboat. Steamboat beat him twice, and then Ric Flair won in the end. Now, when Ric Flair beat him for the title, I wasn't really happy with it because Steamboat was like, this is the last match I'm going to give you, and then after that we're done. I wanted to see Steamboat, you know,
have a run
as a champion. But during the whole time, while I'm watching the first match, okay, it's like Steamboat all the way, right? Then I watch the second match, it's best out of three. By the end of that match, I'm like, Ric Flair, you know, Ric Flair is really good. You know, like I kind of knew about Flair. I mean, with the Four Horsemen stuff, I would watch him in passing. But you know, we were huge Steamboat fans, and at the start of that program, I was like, I just wanted Steamboat to win. But after that second match, I was like, well, wait a minute. Like Flair was the one that really why I enjoyed the match. And then when the third one came around, when Flair won, I was okay with it. And not only that, not only was I okay with it, but then that opened up a whole new avenue for me to have Ric Flair be my favorite wrestler. And I'm not saying that Rusev or John Cena, whatever it is, but when you have a guy like Cena that wins all the time or whenever he loses to a guy that he thinks is not as good as him, that's a problem within itself.
Yeah. And it goes back to the year where Punk was running with the title, and they tried to make that be the year where John Cena, you know, had his trials and tribulations, but it didn't work because, like, he either won every match or he would, or there would be a disqualification or something. There was, even though this was the year that he didn't have the belt and he was on a supposed losing streak, he still won like 80% of his matches.
And he was in all the main events for everything.
And he was in all the main events, right? So he can lose all his matches.
And not only that, but
he's still main event every time and not be a champion.
And he's in the program with The Rock.
Right. And then they're trying to tell you, how he's on this cold streak. Where
when you know he's you know in the end he's going to beat The Rock.
Yeah, well, and he's not really on a cold streak. I mean, like he lost, like maybe instead of winning like 95% of his matches, he only won 80%. So Cole's hard overselling here. Oh, John Cena's in a funk. He's in the coldest streak of his career. No, even if that may be the case, like it just goes to show how out of touch you guys are with the fact that it's not enough to really, you know, make it an underdog story. It was not an underdog story in the least. He's getting pushed into all the main events, even though he's not the champion, and he's still winning like 80-85% of the time. So that's the problem. Like you said, like they can't see that you break the guy down to build him back up. And that's been kind of like the Vince McMahon formula all the way. So I don't know why John Cena is so special that he is the one guy in the business that can't go through that just to see if it's going to work for him. My only two thoughts could be that, one, like, you know, he's making so much money for them that they just don't want to mess with it, and two, he's such a limited character that if he tries to do anything except for what he's doing right now, they know that he's going to look like an ass, so they got to just keep doing the same thing over and over again.
The other thing I want to throw in there, too, is John Cena's demographic is 5-6-year-old kids that don't know any better. And the people that they are losing, you know, I think their whole aspect of it is, like, if we can get these kids at, like, 6 or 7 years old, then they're going to go into the demographic of 18 to 35, and we'll be fine because we're building up such a young base, and then, you know, we can extend that or for whatever it is. They're not the 18 to 35 demographic. Nobody's talking about John Cena, right? I mean, there's no 18-year-old, there's no kids in college right now that are watching wrestling for John Cena. You know, when we're in college, right? Who are we watching? We're watching NWO. We're watching all these kind of like anti-establishment guys. There's no like anti-establishment anything in the WWE that's in the 18 to 35 demographic. So I don't understand that, what's going on with that right now. And I'm hoping that this isn't coming across as like being really negative, that they're doing anything wrong, because I'm in a very good place right now. You know, I'm in a very good place with wrestling. Like I can watch Raw. I'm not sitting there going like, they should push this guy, they should push that guy, because now I have another avenue to watch it. What I'm afraid of is that what I'm seeing from New Japan with the packaging, with everything, it's not just the wrestling, but you're right. It's the interviews after. They're not over the top. The announce team will, there's kind of like a little stepbrother announcing in there. You know, like they'll kind of like reference like Chris Jericho when Devitt comes out and stuff, and kind of make fun of that. The thing that blew me away was that they mentioned Benoit on a telecast. I was like, wow, you know, that's a name I haven't heard in a long time. I'm just afraid that I'm going to start getting into this product so much that WWE, and I've done this before where I was watching WWF for a long time. I saw WCW on this other channel on the mothership on Saturday night. I used to look forward to Saturday nights, and then it came to a point where I stopped watching WWE or WWF, and I was just watching TBS and watching WCW. I'm afraid that I'm starting to do that already, and now this is just kind of, right now WWE is a product to pass the time, and it shouldn't be that way, because they have so much going for them in terms of they should be dominating. I mean, if you're going to be dominating, then just go all out. You know, like you don't have to worry about all this stuff. You know, it's like it's just. There's no direction with them. You know, they want to be like, you know, they trend number one worldwide. You know, they bring up that thing again, like, did you know that we're the number one rated program to send this? Like, so if you have the ratings, then do something. You know, like, try to make the product better. Try to make some wrestlers better. They're not doing it, and that's just where I'm at right now. You know, like, I don't dislike the product, but I don't love the product.
It's watchable. It's like, I guess I feel like this. Like, I have a few TV shows that I watch, right? Aside from wrestling, right? I really like The Blacklist. Let's see. I've been liking Agent Carter pretty well. But, like, Blacklist is kind of like the show I really like. but I still also watch Hawaii Five-0, right? And I know Hawaii Five-0 is not a great show, okay? But, like, it's
a guilty pleasure.
Yeah, I don't have to think for... Yeah. I can just watch and be entertained for, like, 30 minutes. And so... Thing is, like, but at some point, you know, I get tired. I will get tired of it, right, and probably be done with it. So, like, WWE is kind of becoming like muscle memory. Like, I watch it because, you know, I can be entertained for a little bit. But at this point, like, there's not, it's not cutting edge. It's not creative. It's not anything that like has me invested anymore, right?
Is New Japan one of the other shows that you watch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I definitely look forward to every Friday night coming home and...
For a two-year-old program, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And the other one's NXT. I mean, I was watching NXT before I came over here today. And, you know, not all the roster is great over there. But it's a better wrestling show than most of what WWE is putting. And you know, that's, I find that also pretty interesting, that a lot of the guys in the main roster are pissed at the freedom that the guys at NXT are allowed to do. And it just makes no sense to me why you would allow your kind of like a minor league show to put on a better show, have more freedom with guys that theoretically you shouldn't trust as much because, you know, they're your minor league system. Why you would give them all this freedom, give them longer matches, give them, you know, some freedom, creativity of what kind of, like, power set moves they want to use in the ring. It's just, you know, I can understand, like, what and how, if you're an NXT guy...
Why would you want to go to Raw?
Right. What's one of the only, like one of the ways these guys can work on their career and get better and get themselves up to the next spot is by doing really good work in NXT. Okay, but going from NXT up to the main roster now it's not the guaranteed success that it was 2 years ago. So now, as soon as you get up to there and you know now all eyes are on you, the first thing they're going to do is
strip away everything that made you successful in NXT. And to me, that it's just it's mind blowing, man. Like, I don't understand. Like, you're setting up like a guy, you know, like guys like Fandango, guys like Adam Rose, guys like The Ascension. You're setting them up to fail as soon as they step on the main roster. And, you know, I don't even know how good they were in NXT. From what I saw in NXT, a little bit of The Ascension, I wasn't impressed. They can be...
Without Mr. Fuji, they couldn't get dressed?
Even with him, probably. But, you know, I think they could be a serviceable team in on the main roster as part of a good tag team division. But don't try to bring them up and right away, like make them this dominant thing, because it's not going to happen. Fandango, I'd heard good things about Johnny Curtis as a wrestler. But you strap this guy with such a bad gimmick, right? Bo Dallas, the gimmick almost started to work for a little bit, but, you know, he just didn't have it, right? And it's like these guys put on pretty decent matches in NXT from some of the things that I've seen. So it's just, you're setting these guys up to fail when you bring them up to the main roster, and that doesn't make sense to me. It's funny because I'll kind of bring this in NXT, but in my eyes, like, the number one free agent in wrestling right now is Samoa Joe, right? You know, Joe was came to a parting of the ways with TNA, and so I was kind of happy for him. Most reports were like, oh, probably he'll talk to Ring of Honor or New Japan, because Ring of Honor has, like, a big pay-per-view coming up, and he has New Japan ties, and I was kind of like, they'll sound good. I'm happy for Joe. Like, I want Joe to go somewhere where he's going to get used right. And then as much as I would love to see Joe, like, wrestle again, because I couldn't watch TNA anyway because I don't have that channel. And I want to see Joe in the WWE, but in my mind, I'm like, dude, why would Joe come to WWE? And the only thing that I could think of was that he would kick ass on NXT. And I just, even in my mind, I could see Joe, like, you know, I don't know him or anything, but I could just see his mind working. Like, you know, I'd probably like working on NXT a lot more than I would like working on the main WWE roster. And then, sure enough, today I saw on Twitter that he's actually talking to WWE. I mean, they could put some great matches, like him. Like, Kevin Owens is really impressing me right now. So I don't know if you've been able to catch any of the NXT stuff, but
I'm getting there. It's like my Japanese wrestler of the week segment.
Yeah,
you know?
It's never gonna happen.
Yeah,
yeah. So
well,
yeah.
I want it to happen, but yeah,
yeah. Well, Owens is really good, right? He's very impressive, and like I could just a feud between Owens and Joe that would be the money right now. But then I just don't know if I got this feeling that WWE wouldn't know what to do with Samoa Joe, which is hilarious. Like, how you could not figure out something to do with Samoa Joe. But I got that bad feeling that if he went there, that's what would happen. So I don't know. It's like, as much as I want him in WWE, I just got a bad feeling that it wouldn't go well if he ended up going there.
Yeah, no, I think the biggest thing is that NXT is the better product. And I don't know anybody on that NXT roster why they would want to get on the main show. If I was one of those young guys and I was as good as Kevin Owens, good as Zayn and stuff, like, why would I want to go to a show that has no idea what they're doing? And I do want to bring out that the things that I did like on Raw was I liked, you know, I really like Cesaro and Kid, yeah. And then even the Ascension match where Primetime Players gets a small package on him. I like that aspect, but then of course Ascension has to come through with their weak ass finisher, and it's like there's you didn't have to do that. You know, like, I understand why you do that, but you could have, you know, they could have started attack. I mean, how come you can't have, so that they're starting to beat down on what's his name, right?
Young?
On Darren Young. They're starting to beat down on him. How come you can't have... I can't... You know, it's like, it's so bad right now, I can't even remember the guys that... I can't even remember the guys that I actually do like. How come you can't have Tyus, like, come in and make a save, and then, you know, get some... You get Ascension to have that heat right after the match, and then you get other heat by having Primetime Players, you know, fight back or whatever it is. And then, even then, you know, like, right at the point where you think the Primetime Players are going to, like, lay waste to them, then you have like an Ascension member with a chair or something like that, or come with like a with a
foreign object and like knock them out and knock both of them out. So then you have even have more heat. I don't know why me and you are talking about this stuff and it sounds a whole lot better. And we're just thinking off the top of our head where these guys have a ton of time to plan this stuff out and they can't think of stuff like that.
Because they don't plan anything for tag team matches. They're just trying to figure out what they're going to do with John Cena all the time.
Yeah.
Like any kind of dirt sheet or any kind of people that know people in creative or used to be in creative, that's pretty much what they say. Like they got like 30 writers and all of them sit around trying to write stories for John Cena and for whatever their main event is, and they don't pitch
it because they're trying to protect their job.
I suppose. I mean, I just don't know. I don't know how that protects your job. I mean, you got like so many guys that can do so many things on that roster, and no one wants to sit around trying to come up with ideas for them, right? And you come up with, you got 30 guys writing shit promos for Cena. Or, like, the thing is, like, it's the old X-Pac theory. Like, everyone has to get their shit in.
Yeah.
So all these 30 guys have to, like, have their egos fed to put their little piece into whatever John Cena's gonna go out there and butcher when he gets a stick in his hand.
Well, I wouldn't just limit that to John Cena. I mean, I would probably go up and down the whole roster.
I think it's mostly the main event. Like, that.
Yeah.
I mean, they're still scripting heavily and limiting what the guys on the lower part of the card are doing, but they're just not putting that much time and effort into it.
And the perfect example of that is the Shield, right? Because when the Shield was hot, when they were hot, they were getting a lot of freedom of what they could do. Rollins was doing stuff that I'd never seen before, and I was like, I want to watch a Rollins match. They have taken so much from him now, where, you know, but the funny thing is, I mean, it's like, I don't want to do all doom and gloom, because the three-way match they had was a great match. Rollins really shined in that match. It's like, well, so give the guy the ball. You know, like, let him have some singles match and just let him call a match or let him, you know, whatever it is. So I still enjoy the product. Don't get me wrong. I mean, but you're right. It is muscle memory. It's like, you know, something that, you know, like, I have to watch it because we're doing this. And it's a different I have to watch it. Like, a year ago, it's like, I have to watch it because we have to do this. And then it's like, you know, I don't want to fucking do this week because it's like, it's the same old thing over and over again. I have to watch it for this, but there's a lot more opportunities that we can see with people. This was a lackadaisical Raw. Like, if you go to, like, my playbook of what wrestling should be, the show after the pay-per-view should be on all cylinders. And part of the guys that I hated did really well in that. Hulk Hogan would do really well after the pay-per-view. If he lost, man, watch out, because he's going to clean house and he's going to play the super heel, and you're going to watch that. You're going to watch that show. You know, so the playbook isn't really there. And it's just it's kind of funny because this is one of the first WrestleManias in a long time where you have a lot of things that are going well, but then right the month before, it's like your programs are just bad.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I've come to expect bad programming leading up to Mania, but they usually have, like, a pretty solid framework of what Mania is going to be. So it's kind of like, okay, yeah, well, I know this match is going to happen. I know this match is going to happen. There's not a ton of matches, I don't think, that are really set in stone, right? Like, you got Reigns and Bryan, you got Triple H and Sting, which nobody cares about.
Well, Reigns and Brock.
Sorry, yeah, Reigns and Brock. And then after that, is there even another match booked?
I think it's going to be a four-way for the Intercontinental Championship.
Okay, well, we think maybe, so in that.
Yeah, but well, I think that, so we can at least say I think there's going to be one, so that's the framework of one.
Yeah, officially there's no Bray and Undertaker yet,
though. But that's like that's going to happen. Stardust and Goldust.
Okay.
And then Usos and Kid and Cesaro.
Okay, so then nothing for Daniel Bryan, nothing for John Cena.
Nothing for John Cena and Rusev.
Well, but Rusev refused the rematch.
Well, yeah, okay, yeah, but that's the perfect opportunity to have John Cena doing promo after promo. He might throw a rap in there about Rusev. He might do his one where he's really angry and he's going to yell at the top of his lungs that the champ will be here or whatever. So
could he make a couple jokes?
Yeah, no. So you're gonna have
a funny, 30 of those writers can get all their shit in.
You're gonna have a funny promo. You're gonna have an angry promo. Maybe he's going to do some raps, or better yet, he can rap. The next one, he's going to show funny pictures of Rusev, and he's going to make fun of Rusev, and then leading it, the last promo, he's going to be angry again.
How about a picture of Rusev in a diaper? Because I don't think he's ever done that before.
I wouldn't mind having a picture of Lana in a diaper. You know. Or maybe
that got weird real quick.
But. Yeah, well, maybe Lana changing Rusev's diaper. You know, because remember that one where he had a
John picture. Cena is the master of Photoshop.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So
and he's never done it before though.
Never. No. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, I don't want to come across saying like I hate the product because I don't, but I'm really glad that I'm watching New Japan now, so I'll just end it at that. Let's start getting into our segments real fast. We're going to have our rusted mic, and let's cross our fingers.
Another rusty one?
Another rusty mic, yeah. Rusty nail.
You know me, Gene. These are titanium steel blades. They will cut through absolutely anything. You know I love the blades, Gene. The blades are part of me. Now, Madness, listen up. Because I'm going to make a party of you.
I can't believe that, Hulk Hogan.
You better believe it, Mean Gene.
Yeah.
But the thing that all those Hulkamaniacs that were stopped on the side of the road couldn't believe was the package I had riding on the back of my fender, brother. With those long, sexy, curvaceous legs that wrapped around me. With the arms that hung onto my waist for dear life. With a set of headlights that were pointed straight ahead, brothers, and the smile across the secret weapon's face, just like an acre of sunshine, satisfaction guaranteed. We're gonna take it to him, brother. We're gonna wipe out the Macho Man. We're gonna destroy Zeus, and then we're gonna get Scary Sherry and put her in her place. What are you dudes gonna do when the barber, the blade, and Hulkamania run wild on you?
Get ready for the big main event here at SummerSlam. Wow.
Was the secret weapon Miss Elizabeth?
I think so.
Yeah, see, there's more proof right there of that what Jesse Ventura was saying about Hulk Hogan lusting over Miss Elizabeth.
I just want to know what titanium blades are. Not titanium, but titanium. Titanium blades, yeah. It sounds like a video game.
It's pretty similar to vibranium.
Vibranium, yeah.
Yeah.
Adamantium. It sounds like a Phantasy Star video game, you know? Titanium blades of steel or something.
Sounds like a...
blades of titanium.
Sounds like...
Phantasy Star 55.
Like a...
blades of titanium.
economy sedan. Like, when you get your Maxima... And you got your...
Didn't you drive a Maxima for a while? No, you had the Altima, right?
Yes, yes. And the Supra. It's not Super, it's a Supra.
Or the Fortress.
It's not Maximum, it's a Maxima. And now you have the Titanius, or
Titanian.
Titanian, sorry, yeah. Sorry.
Fancy Star 56.
That was perhaps the worst...
Titanian Blades. The search for titanium.
That was maybe the worst... Beefcake promo I ever heard, because he didn't start talking all quiet and then get loud at the end. The classic patterns of speech of Brutus Beefcake. I don't know why they try to let Zeus wrestle, man. That was pretty brutal.
Well, the worst part was I didn't mind the wrestling so much, but the promos that he did were even worse. I should have got that one.
Hulk Hogan Beefcake Barber, we are going to destroy you.
How you do that with your eye?
You like that, huh?
I can't even do that. I can't do it.
I had the Perry Saturn crooked eye going.
No, that was more. You're killing me right now, dude. If the producer could put the picture of that on, we can do it.
Yeah,
that was the HBK eye going. It's like, get away with me with that flipping bow and arrow, okay? Because I don't know where you're looking at right now, dude.
He could add the video of that right after the air quotes.
I don't like the way you're looking at me, Napoleon. You never watched Napoleon Dynamite?
I did. It wasn't good.
You didn't enjoy it?
Not at all.
Not once.
I thought it was stupid.
You're just racist against white people, dude. You're racist against Middle America, dude.
I don't like the way they treated Pedro.
Pedro? Okay. All right, good.
Actually, I just didn't like the movie.
Okay. Hall of Kayfabe.
Well, so I threw a name at the end of last week that you seemed a little more excited about than the guy we actually inducted. So did you want to go with that guy?
I've already forgot the guy, but go ahead.
I threw the name Elix Skipper out.
Yeah, let's do that.
If you want to go Elix Skipper to end out February.
So Elix Skipper, I never liked the guy.
I mean, I never liked him. He unfortunately made his debut as WCW was falling flat on his face. I thought he had potential, a nice kind of hybrid high flyer. Had a weak finishing move, that leg thing that he used to do. It's just a weak move. I don't even know what it's called anymore, but it's one where he puts his leg, he wraps his leg around the guy's neck, and then he turns him over. And
like the John Morrison kind of neck.
Yeah, that one. And then, but the guy had the best off-the-top-of-the-cage move I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, that might be like one of the all-time high spots, right? To me,
that's one of the top three high spots I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
I mean, the running Frankensteiner off the top of the cage, and the whole thing is that he bumped as well. It wasn't like he just stayed on the cage. I mean, he fell as well. One of the best high spots. I mean, I think that's... Tell me a better high spot than that one. Can you do that?
Maybe Foley getting thrown off the top of the Hell in the Cell.
Yeah, that's probably, yeah.
And the
two bumps that Foley took in that Hell in the Cell.
And then the other, and I think this might... In my personal recollection, this one's up there, but, you know, technically, probably the Skipper one's better would be the when Edge hit the hit the spear off of, like, off of the 20-foot ladder onto, I forget it was Jeff or Matt, but one of them was hanging from the belt.
It was Jeff. I think the Skipper one's better than that one.
Probably.
The only other one that I think could be better, like any spot that Shane did. I'm surprised we haven't put Shane in the Hall of Kayfabe, because that guy had probably, I mean, the best of his three high spots are the best in the business. And I'm not even talking about the one from the top ladder, you know, when they're at the entrance ramp. But then he would also do like the diving drop kick with the
trash can.
To the trash can and to the steel chair as well. Mm-hmm. So elbow
from the top rope out to the announce table was a move he had quite a bit.
Hey, where the hell did that come from? I mean, you're watching this from like, dude. I mean, this guy's like fat as all hell. How is he doing this stuff?
He just grew up in a ring.
Yeah,
but so then I guess so. Skipper was also
Skinner.
Skinner? No, not that guy.
The Alligator Man.
He was pretty big in ECW. So I think that was the other thing too. Like, his prime years were in ECW, where we didn't really watch a ton of that. But like, he was in there at the same time as a lot of the guys that we ended up, you know, being some of our favorites, like Benoit, like Jericho. So I know because one of my friend from Philadelphia, Mike. Like, he was always talking about ECW and particularly that faction Triple Threat, right? And that was what Elix was a part of. It was him, and it was Low Key, and wasn't Shane Douglas, was it? It was
no. Shane Douglas was with Benoit and Malenko. And
right. But then they what was it? It was another guy that was a really good worker, right? So, like, I would have actually liked to have seen some of that, right? Because, you know, it was a good, like, a small faction of three guys that could all really work. You know, I don't think Skipper had a ton of, like, charisma or anything like that, but the guy could work and put on some pretty entertaining matches.
Well, then on top of that, I mean, it wasn't Beer Money. It was against America's Most Wanted with that cage match, and then it had my unsung hero, which is Christopher Daniels, who I was a huge fan of, and still am. And you're talking about, like, watching Daniels with Loki and or Senshi or whatever it was. Like, and you know, I liked when you let Senshi wrestle, the guy could do great things, and he just died in WWE because they wouldn't allow him to do any of his moves. And like the stomps that Devitt does, right? Mm-hmm. Senshi or Loki did way better stomps. I mean, just like the guy was money. He was small as all hell, but he made a name for himself in Japan as well. So you're kind of going from, you have Daniels and Low Key together, and you put him with Elix Skipper, and you're kind of like Triple H when they're talking about Paul Roma being in the Four Horsemen. You're going like, the job guy from WCW? But you know, watching this match and watching all the high spots in that match, they stole a lot of shows. I mean, and to tell you the truth, I think, to me, that's the standard for any type of cage match, because the stuff they were doing and the bumps they were taking, I'm not saying it's the best cage match I've ever seen, but I'm not a big fan of cage matches in itself, but that match, just on that match alone, he deserves to be in there. And Curtis Hawkins or whatever, it wasn't Curtis. Who was in America's Most Wanted?
No, it was James Storm and one of the guy's actual name was Wildcat. Was the guy's name?
Yeah. So, you know, just he goes on just off of that move alone. But at the same time, I mean, like, he would put on some, you know, some athletic matches, kind of, and he was kind of like, I would say he's like a, he's not a poor man's Benoit, but he's like a beggar on the street corner Benoit, you know, just kind of, you know, had a decent build. He could kind of do some power stuff at the same time if the other guy would let him do power. The same way with Benoit, you know, at the time. He could mix it up, and I have no problem putting this guy in. I mean, you know, would you watch that match today and still be impressed? I think you would.
I kind of have a feeling if we went back and watched a lot of the ECW stuff we didn't care for back in the 90s, and we watched it now, I think we might have a different outlook on a lot of the guys that were out there. Because at the time, it was the third best promotion, but compared to some of the, you know, the limitations that guys are working with today, it might actually be pretty refreshing.
Probably would, yeah. So we should have Paul Heyman buy that library, and then, you know, we can get on Access and watch that, and then all of a sudden we have three promotions that we can watch again, you know. So
there's ECW on there.
Huh? I know there's ECW on there, but it's not current, you know. I guess.
I'd have to look and see.
But the whole thing is when I'm watching. See, I haven't even turned on the WWE Network in a long time because they got rid of the, you know, Monday Night Wars is no longer on there. The rivalries, they're not doing it. So those are like really the only two things that I watch. And I think I watched a lot because we were doing our end of the year awards and stuff. So I was watching a lot then. There's really not any motivation for me to watch. And if I do watch the network, it'll be for like either Beyond the Mat kind of, documentaries on certain wrestlers and stuff, or getting back into NXT. So,
you should definitely get into NXT.
Yeah. So, let's end it off there. We're in an hour and 20. Our next show is going to be Muda Scale 100. So we kind of figure out what we're going to do with that. We have my boy, Better Have My Donuts over here. As of the start of the podcast, he probably had 71 followers. Now he's probably back down to 70. Started a podcast, I had like 680. I'm probably down to 679. So we'll see how it goes. We'll check you guys out next week. Better Have My Donuts on Bad News Ramen.
Fake press.
There we go.
I like Nike, but wait a minute. The neighborhood supports, so put some money in it. A corporation's old, they gotta give up the dough to my town, or else we got.